You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts, to get the latest episodes. Merry Christmas, everyone. Many of you are probably celebrating the holiday and hopefully having a safe and happy time with or without your family. I personally was having a special day with my wife and son and the Miami Heat, who opened up a full slate of Christmas Day games by taking on the New Orleans Pelicans and Zion Williamson. The Heat looked a little sluggish at the start. They're fielding a second different starting lineup in their second straight game. Myers Leonard was in the starting lineup. He played 20 minutes, finished with 9 points. A decision that made a lot of sense considering the fact that New Orleans does have a large front court behind Zion Williamson and Steven Adams, the 7-footer from the Oklahoma City Thunder, who they acquired this past offseason. Leonard from the Western Conference has had several matchups against Adams. It just seemed to make a lot of sense for him to be in the starting lineup, and he responded well. But for the second straight game, Tyler Hero, also in the starting lineup, looked a little off. He's been struggling as a starter, something I'll talk about later on in the show. But he seems like he's forcing the issue, not quite sure exactly what to do with himself, and he's not playing like the confident player he was in either the Orlando bubble or even when he was coming off the bench during the regular season last year. So this is a departure from the version of Hero that we're used to seeing and expected. Me in particular thought that he would start off to a very promising start of the regular season. That has not happened. And he does look a little bit uncomfortable out there. It's only been 2 games. Perhaps he'll bounce back. He did show some flashes where, while he was struggling, I think he was still being aggressive, trying to establish his game, trying to make an impact in some way. Did show some improved defense and even a couple of playmaking chops there. So not a bad game overall. And statistically, you know, it was kind of a meh game. 3 of 10 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3-point range, 3 of 3 from the line, 11 total points. 3 assists, a steal, 2 rebounds. So, again, not much that you can take from it statistically in 32 minutes. He got a lot of playing time, mostly because Jimmy Butler was hurt, did not start the second half, didn't play the second half at all. And so there were some concerns there about who would take up the slack. At least part of it fell on Bam Adebayo. His jumper was falling early on, looked good, finished with 17 points in just 28 minutes. In fact, Miami wound up having such a convincing lead in the second half where they didn't have to play Adebayo much at all in that fourth quarter in particular. After being down by as many as 8 points in the first, Spo went to his bench. Goran Dragic, the Dragon, continues to impress. Looks as good as he did in the Orlando bubble. Impossible to believe considering the injury that he sustained in Orlando, the fact that he is a little older. And I'm not quite sure how long it's going to last, but for now, he's been incredible. He looked really, really good. It helped immediately settle the offense in the second quarter. And Avery Bradley, the former Laker, in his first regular season minutes, made an immediate impact, was a great perimeter defender. At first, it didn't seem like that offense would click in. We saw some moments during the preseason where he looked a little uncomfortable offensively. That was not the case today. He had an incredible impact on both sides of the ball. He was absolutely sensational, as was Miami's bench. The Heat had 19 fast break points to New Orleans 6. A lot of that was Goran and the rookie Precious Achiuwa, but there were a number of players that just seemed like they were pushing the ball in transition. You wouldn't think that was the case, especially against a team like the Pelicans, who is known for having a younger roster with the exception of J.J. Redick, Brandon Ingram, Williamson, etc. All these young players, you'd think they'd be the ones pushing the pace, even though that's not typically Stan Van Gundy's style. Miami, conversely, with the reputation for being somewhat older and a veteran-laden team, they were the ones that were really pushing the pace substantially. They got out there and, again, converted 19 fast-break points. Miami lost a rebounding battle, so it was necessary for them to, again, have their pace at their comfort level. They were the one controlling the flow of the game. Williamson collected 14 boards. Steven Adams added another 9, so they dominated the rebounding edge. Didn't really matter. Miami shot the ball well, and again, controlling the pace, scoring at will. They had a lot of good opportunities. Their offense got a little bogged down in the fourth quarter. In the second half in general, without Jimmy out there, and you needed to they got it a little comfortable, I'll be honest with you. When they built that commanding 23-point lead after their second unit really inserted a level of energy there, and I think they got a little complacent. They were also struggling to see who would come up with offense with Jimmy out of the game. It didn't seem like anybody was particularly aggressive, but they just got key contributions from guys like Duncan Robinson and everybody else. Just a phenomenal game overall, despite some lagging moments here and there. Now on to the big story of the game for me. It's Jimmy Butler's injury. I mentioned it last recap, where he tweaked that ankle. It seemed like, from what Eric Spoelstra told reporters after the game, it was a group decision between Jimmy, the trainers, and the coaching staff not to push it any further than needed to be. He rolled that ankle a little bit. It was just a lingering injury. Don't want to make it worse this early on in the season, which is going to be a long-term concern. So I would actually hope that he misses at least one of the next two games. The Heat are off until Tuesday, when they have a back-to-back set at home against the Milwaukee Bucks. So that should be interesting. Knowing Jimmy, he's going to want to compete out there against the Bucks, but we'll see how it happens. The second biggest story of the game, the little story, if you will, Duncan Robinson had a historically great shooting performance, tying the December 25th record for most three-pointers during an NBA game. Brandon Ingram, surprisingly, had the record as well, 7 three-pointers, not established in today's game, although he did have 4 shots from behind the arc, but it was in the previous season. But for Duncan, I made the point during the game, and I'm going to stand by it. I think he looks better as a shooter than he did last season. You know, he was 8 of 14 overall, 7 of 13 from three-point range. But his comfort level, the speed with which he puts up those shots, everything works so well for him, and he continues to be such a dangerous threat. It's amazing to see him come up big and just seem to really have an opportunity to convert three-point shots regularly, and he just does not seem to miss. I feel comfortable with whatever shot he takes. In fact, the one shot that early on he missed, he was 7 of 8 at one point. The one shot he missed was actually a wide-open look from the corner, and I was surprised that he missed it. At this point, I'm convinced that every shot he takes is going to fall, and I think that's just him establishing another level to his game. The three big takeaways: Myers' insertion in the starting lineup, again, really solid outing for him. I don't know how much you can expect with him guarding Adams. Adams seemed to dominate the paint a little bit. Again, was scoring at will. They were switching a lot because of Myers' general lack of foot speed. They were switching a lot in general. I thought it was going to be a much more direct battle between Zion and Bam, but Bam was getting the switch a lot. Jimmy was picking him up. Maybe that was a reason why that aggravated the injury from his first game, because he was just taking on the 185-pound body of Zion Williamson. Not an easy task. Goran Dragic, I think, is also a point I should continue to reiterate how good he looks, because he really just seems dominant. Was a couple nice spin moves. The shot is falling. I mean, what more can you say? He's 34 years old, and he's still playing as good as ever. I do want to say, I'm noticing a lot of people making a point that I've been making for years, and I'm not one to pat myself on the back, but I just want some, not recognition necessarily. I've been saying for years that Goran Dragic is the best point guard in Heat history, and that he'll have his number retired here, that he deserves to be a part of Heat franchise lore, because he has been through so many different versions of this team. So I like how everybody's kind of saying now that he deserves to have his number retired and that he should be a lifer, and questioning whether or not he's a team's point guard. It's something I've been saying for a long time. I just want that to be known, because I have always recognized his impact, not just on the court, but off the court. He's always worked well with media here, but on the court, he's been so consistent. And although the team didn't win much, that was through no fault of him as an individual. It changed a lot. There was a lot of different iterations of this team, from Deion to Josh Richardson to Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh and his injury issues. So many different things that he could never really establish himself, Goran, that is, as a true leader of this team. But now he's just been a consistently really good scorer and has been for a long time. I'm glad he's getting the appreciation. I also think that it's a little late. It's been something I've been saying for a long time. And lastly, Avery Bradley continues to look really, really solid. I wasn't sure what to expect after he did not play in the first game against the Orlando Magic, and then he kind of struggled in the preseason. He had been off since March. He did not play in the Orlando bubble by his own choice, so we had some concerns about whether or not he would be able to make an impact. But let me tell you, those questions were answered and then some. He looked very, very impressive. I'll break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in the next segment before answering your listener questions here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. There's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust for your online booking needs. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. The NBA has kicked off. Time to start placing bets. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive the 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Got questions betting on the NBA? It doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast. They picked today's game very easily. They said it would be a double-digit commanding win even before the Jimmy Butler injury. It certainly was. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Believe me, these guys know what they're talking about. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. Recurring segment, whatever you recap of every game. I'll go into some of the things that worked really well, the good, and of course the bad, things that did not work as well, or seemed to stand out a little bit to me, and then some things that might be a little odd, of course, the ugly. So the good, Precious Achiuwa. I continue to be impressed by Achiuwa, incredible as a rookie, making the impact that he is. And in the post-game media session, I asked Spo about it directly, and this was his response regarding leaving Achiuwa in there in the fourth quarter, even as New Orleans was cutting down what was a 23-point lead down to about nine or so. He has really improved in the 2 weeks where we've worked with him. Imagine that. This is outside of the quote. 2 weeks, no summer league, no anything. And so I mentioned that too. He said, continuing his quote, "We can all imagine how much further he could have gone if we had our normal summer league and summer development program. He is committed to the work with studying film and working with the coaches. He picks up things very quickly, a skill amongst itself. Defensively, he was good, particularly in the fourth quarter, even though Williamson finds himself at the free throw line. It's one of the hardest lanes to cover." You know, look, I think the one-on-one matchup with Zion is almost an impossible one. He is a unique athlete. I'm not necessarily a fan of his game, although it's so quick twitchy. You know, all of it is just kind of responding. His second bounce, as everybody has pointed out to, as impressive as any. He's so much more athletic despite his size, and it's so difficult to cover him. But the free throw attempts, it seems like that's such a big component of his game. I don't know. Maybe there just needs to be more well-rounded game. I don't want to sound like James Harden and criticizing Giannis Antetokounmpo or anything like that. But at the same time, I just have not been a fan of Zion's game. Maybe I haven't watched him enough. I don't want to appear overly critical either. But as for Precious, just continues to look like he is seamlessly fitting in with an offense. And for a player, one of the recurring themes of this season, you'll hear it a lot, not just on this show, but in almost every aspect of the NBA, rookies are not going to have that treatment, that same time frame that Spo mentioned, the lack of a summer league, the lack of a development program. And it's been talked about a lot, where players generally get drafted in July. Then they report to summer league or late June. Then they report to summer league in July. They're with the team for a week or two. Then they go on, do their own thing. They're usually reporting to the cities they were drafted in. They get to work with their vets. We saw Tyler Hero joining Jimmy Butler in Chicago last year after he got drafted. So much happened during that time period where he was able to establish himself as a young player who wants to put in the work. And then, of course, that continued here in Miami. Precious had none of that. He got drafted a few weeks ago, got a call from Tyler Hero, got to working with Tyler somewhere in Miami over the last couple weeks. Then they went through training camp that ended almost as quickly as it began, and now the regular season is here. And somehow he still found a way to connect with Goran Dragic. They've already formed a really, really good pick-and-roll combination, probably one of the best in the league so far, and that's just been early on. I know it's probably somewhat hyperbolic to talk about it so quickly, but at least there's chemistry there, and it's been very, very impressive. And I just, defensively, I think he's been good. He's a little undersized, despite the muscle, despite the overall size. Yes, he's a big man, but he's not as big, and certainly not big enough to contend with a Zion type or a Steven Adams type. Both of them on the more physical side of the spectrum when it comes to the NBA. So it was a little overpowering. There were moments there where you could tell that Precious was a little out of his depth, still able to respond. And Spo felt comfortable leaving in there in the fourth quarter. Again, there was a big lead, and you kind of want to figure out whether or not these players will respond in some way. Precious absolutely did. provided energy, continued to make an impact, and, you know, Miami won the game. It was a not necessarily a blowout, but you didn't really get a sense that they were going to blow this game. New Orleans just wasn't able to capitalize on any momentum late in the fourth quarter. Wound up being a 13-point win. It was hovering around 13 to 15 points for most of the game, even after they had dipped into that original 20-something point lead. So not great. The bad for Miami, 26 combined free throws for Zion and Brandon Ingram. Ingram, very different in that he's not forcing contact because he's not as big as Williamson, obviously, but he's lanky, he's long, and he's going to be drawing contact. I feel like some of those whistles were a little too generous, given the fact, again, that Miami started to blow out New Orleans earlier. Maybe they felt like they could even the game out by getting some generous calls there. It was really, really, really one-sided. And I know Miami, without Jimmy in the lineup, they don't have anybody on the roster that draws free throws at a high rate. It's a little bit more glaring when you see Williamson and Ingram constantly on the line. 26 combined free throws. That's ungodly. And then, of course, from Miami's side, nobody's getting to the line at all. In fact, Miami finished with 23 free throws, so less than the other two players combined. So, you know, what can you say? Jimmy needs to be out there. He needs to do what he does best and make an impact. And then defensively, I don't think it was any kind of issue. I know, you know, Mo Harkless struggled with Williamson. His size, as Zoe pointed out, is going to be difficult for any one player to cover. I thought Bam would be able to do a better job, but maybe you don't want to risk him incurring injury or getting into foul trouble. They were switching off a lot, and Spo tightened his rotations a little bit. He went to, you know, Precious. He went to Myers as a starter. Didn't really go too deep into his bench other than Mo Harkless getting some minutes, and not a whole heck of a lot of playing time either. Harkless only got 9 total minutes. But the one player who did not, and a lot of Heat fans thought should get some playing time, KZ Okpala. You know, I talked about after that big preseason game he had against the Toronto Raptors that I thought he was finally at a point where he could get a lot of playing time, or at least get some playing time. It seemed like Spo was understanding how impactful a game he could have, and that Okpala had done the work necessary in order to get not just a starting nod in the preseason, but also some substantial minutes where he looked fluid, he looked great on offense. That has not been the case over the last couple seasons. I'm not sure if it's you kind of want to stash him until second half of the season, kind of like your own emergency trade acquisition, you know, the way that Jay Crowder threw everybody for a loop when he was on Miami's roster. Maybe you want to save Okpala for later on in the season when you feel like you've gone into a comfortable rhythm. It's always good to have that kind of depth, to have talent on the roster that you want to be able to establish and develop and maybe get more comfortable. I don't know. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe Okpala isn't doing enough in practices to warrant any playing time. You hate to think that Spo is withholding his minutes because of some lack of effort or anything like that. I don't think it's ability. Everybody has talked about Okpala. We've seen it in action against the Raptors. It seems like a foregone conclusion that he would get some playing time. And tonight, with Jimmy Butler out of the lineup, you'd think that he would get some more time. He did not get any time. So I'll answer a question about him in the next segment. And I'll just get into a lot of the listener questions, not just about Okpala, but about some of the other aspects of the game. Again, a 13-point win. The Heat even up their record to 1-1 in the regular season. It's going to be a long, strange season. They're off until Tuesday when they take on the Milwaukee Bucks. But let's get into some of your listener questions here in the next segment on Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I'll be at the arena next week covering those Bucks games that I mentioned. Did not go today because, one, it's Christmas. The game started at 12. Lots of different factors that made the coverage less than ideal. Look, it is not the best venue anymore. You're not getting the same kind of excitement. My colleague Ben Golliver mentioned it on his own Open Floor podcast later this week when he was covering the ring ceremony for the Los Angeles Lakers, a sore subject I'm sure a lot of people listening to this show are still feeling, as am I. But as being at the Staples Center without a lot of people there, with hardly anybody, less than 200, as Ben mentioned, it's just not the same kind of vibe. And it's something that I felt when I covered my preseason game here against the same Pelicans. And you just didn't get a, you didn't get the same kind of vibe of it being a game. It was kind of this long, drawn-out affair. You see all the behind-the-scenes work being done by the fabulous staff of the America Airlines Arena. But as far as the game and game operations, just it's not the same. And Ben put it very eloquently, like being in the bubble, something he talked about on this podcast during the Orlando bubble. You know, there was a sense of intimacy there. You're sitting a few feet away from these players. You're one of a limited number of media members watching everything play out there. And while the on TV product is certainly no different than it was outside of the bubble, it's just felt differently in Orlando. And here, during these games, you're in this cavernous arena that holds 20,000 people, more or less, and you're like one of a couple hundred people. It just feels weird. Everything's empty. There's nobody around. There's no energy from the fans walking in, no food, no concessions, no beer, no nothing. It's just the vibe isn't there. And in fact, the crowd noise that's being pumped in winds up becoming a quick annoyance more than anything else. So that's just my own two cents about it. I just don't know that the coverage of the game is going to be the same since I don't have any kind of direct impact, you know, connection with players. I won't be able to interact with them. You know, you're on Zoom calls. And for that, quite frankly, I might as well be home because I don't have to worry about traveling so much. I'm trying to attend as many games as possible to see if I find anything different on TV. But for right now, I have not seen anything. I've only covered one preseason game, but I don't think I missed anything from Christmas's game either. We'll see how it plays out in the future. I'm lucky to be one of a few credentialed members of the media. I want to take advantage of those opportunities. This has not been a great season to do that. I don't think it will be a great season, so we'll see what happens. But anyway, on to the listener questions that were sent in using that hashtag, AskLOHeat. The first one comes in from Huddy22, who writes, is Duncan Robinson becoming the most important player of this Heat's team? No, I would still argue that that's probably Bam Adebayo. You can make not necessarily a three-way tie. I think they all have an impact in different ways. That would be Jimmy, who is the star player that you can rely on for a lot. Goran, arguably the third best player. Duncan could make a case for being the third most important player because I think you still rely on Jimmy for those points when you're struggling. He can control the pace of the game single-handedly in a way that no other player on this roster can. Bam is a focal point on offense and defense. But if you need somebody to bail you out offensively, and if he's got it going and he can somehow get his shot off against multiple defenders or if the defense isn't keying in on him the way it did on occasion in the Orlando bubble, then yes, Duncan is a supremely impactful player. There's his gravity, even if that shot isn't following. We saw that during those games when he was being covered particularly well in the Eastern Conference Finals by the Boston Celtics. And I think, yes, to Huddy's point, he is important as hell to Miami's success. That's just a reality. He is a dangerous shooter. We saw that in the first half, just opened everything up. And there's always the threat of that shot being able to fall, even if he's not knocking it down as well as he did in the first half. We'll see what happens moving forward, but my thought is that Duncan's going to continue to be an impactful player. Right now, I would rank him as the third most important player behind Jimmy and Bam, simply because of what they do, not just as an individual in Jimmy's case, but in the team-wide impact in Bam's case. I think it's still greater than what Duncan provides, particularly because of some issues that he might have defensively as well. Yuli writes in, when do you think KZ Okpala will get his first minutes? Yuli, I have no idea. I don't think anybody does. I don't think Spoelstra does. As I mentioned before in the last segment, I just think that they might be holding him back just to kind of give him some more space. They don't want to rush him out there. There's some behind-the-scenes action or inaction, perhaps, that we're not privy to as media members. I haven't heard anything. I don't know. It would have to be a substantial number of injuries, and I don't want to see that be the case. I want to see KZ get playing time because he's earned it. I know Spo loves going to, you know, veteran players, but I don't think Mo Harkless has shown anything defensively or offensively that warrants a bump in his playing time over a player like Okpala that shows some promise. So it must be, again, either they're withholding him on purpose. And as Spo mentioned to me when I asked him about Avery Bradley's playing time, look, there's a long-term plan here. They want to save some guys. They want to keep them fresh because there's going to be a need to rely on that depth later on in the season. Maybe that's a plan. Maybe that's a point of contention that they want to emphasize. The worst-case scenario is that he's struggling to pick up things offensively or defensively, that he hasn't been playing well in practices, and you're not going to earn any playing time for Eric Spoelstra if you're struggling in practice. This next question comes from Max. he writes in, is Spo going to dictate his starting lineup based on the opponent? Yes, I think that's certainly a factor, Max. I also think that it has something to do with what I mentioned, that long-term plan, trying to save guys. You don't want to risk injury because of this weird compressed season, and you're just going to need to rely on different players at different times. I'm okay with it, to be honest with you. One of the things that really stood out to me in the Orlando bubble that made Spo seem so successful, so on top of every aspect and every micromanagement type of decision possible, was that he was fluid, that he was flexible in a way that he has not been during most points in his career. I think he's gone to a point now because of COVID-19, because of its impact on the roster and decision-making process, you need to be a little flexible. I'm okay with it. I know some guys prefer a sort of regularity, a comfort rhythm that you can get into, but I think you're at the point where, as a veteran, you should be able to work your way in and out of the lineup. Look at Myers. I mean, Myers, a longtime veteran, hasn't played much in the preseason or regular season. He didn't play in that first game, obviously, against Orlando. And then he gets in as a starter today, makes an immediate impact. I think it's up to you to stay ready as an individual, as a player. And yes, as long as that communication process, and I mentioned this before, for Spo, I think it's something he's improved a lot on over the course of his tenure as the head coach. As long as he's communicating to players overall, and that's from any manager over any employee, you want to be able to communicate, look, I can't use you right now, but I'm going to rely on you on occasion, and you'll not know when that's going to be. I don't know when it's going to be, but I need you to stay sharp, to stay focused. As long as that line of communication is open, look at Kelly Olynyk. He didn't play today. I mean, that's a little peculiar, but I think it's going to be tough for Spo to make these kinds of decisions. Maybe in Olynyk's case, he's not a great defensive matchup going against Williamson and Adams. I don't know that Harkless is any better, but he got some playing time. I'm not here questioning Spo. That's your job as fans. I think you're going to question him repeatedly, regardless of the success of those decisions. I like Spo's flexibility when it comes to that starting lineup. Poppy Roy writes in, do you expect more minutes for Bradley moving forward? Yes. Yes, I do. I think he's earned them. I think he's a veteran. I think he's got Spo's respect, perhaps in a way that Olynyk do not, which is strange. But I think he has an impact, a role to play. And I did ask him about those minutes because I think it was a little strange that Bradley did not play that first game. And this was Spo's response to me when I asked him about why Avery didn't play in that first game and why he got so many minutes in the second game. Spo's quote begins, I would not have liked or planned to play Avery this many minutes. Now, I'll step out of here of the quote for a second to say that Avery Bradley did play 28 total minutes against the Pelicans. So continuing with Spo's quote, the season is a 9.5 month long. We are looking at the big picture. He played well, so we left him in there. He also has an extremely high fitness level and kept in great shape while we were in the bubble. He is working his way back into the rhythm with a new team and finding that comfort level. I wanted to bring him along slowly. That was the plan. So I think moving forward, he's going to get some more playing time. I think it's just an area of need for Miami. If you're going to continue to go with the Tyler Heroes experiment at the starting lineup, I think it's only fair to occasionally bring in Bradley as a strong level defender, especially if you're going to get a much needed boost offensively from Goran Dragic off the bench. I think Bradley knows his role as a veteran. He knows how to fit along seamlessly. That rhythm that Spo mentioned to me, I think Bradley understands it perhaps in a way that Okpala and Olynyk and others do not. That would be my guess. I think, Poppy, that Bradley is going to get some playing time. I think he thrived in it. I think he did really well against New Orleans, and I think he can continue to do well in the future as well. Daniel writes, where do babies come from? Daniel, it's a stork. Everybody knows this. I'm a little surprised that you're asking at your age. I would have expected more from you, to be honest with you. That's the short-term and long-term answer. Moving forward, Lockdown Women's Basketball is the only daily podcast covering the world of women's hoops. Join an all-star cast of hosts each day of the week for a comprehensive look at the world of the WNBA, women's college basketball, and international competition. You won't find it anywhere else, so make sure you subscribe to Lockdown Women's Basketball on your favorite podcast provider. Remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Lockdown Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.